The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading for the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Excuse me, I kind of had a little mishap there starting the thing up, so we had a moment of silence before we got the music, but it's on now. And let's start off with a little humor in uniform, since I might have fooled myself. And it's a picture of a cocktail party, a drawing of a cocktail party. And there's a young lady standing there with a cocktail on her thing, and there's a gentleman standing across from her. Looks like he's somewhat elderly. He's in a full uniform. He's got tons and tons of ribbons and medals on him. And he's answering her question, obviously, where did you get them all? Why, any time I've been asked, what do you want? Do you want a medal? I said yes. Must be Air Force. That's terrible. I shouldn't say that. That's cruel. Our platoon officer was a tough-talking woman who barked orders right and left. We referred to as the witch behind her back, or we thought it was behind her back. One day she encountered a private with a bucket of cleanup on cleanup duty. As he came to attention, some water accidentally spilled on her shoes. She let the soldier wallow in fear before asking, "Did you really think I would melt?" And of all places, it's from Michael Berry in Leavenwood, Kansas. Not in Kansas anymore. As a young trainee, I was ordered to hand out the 30-caliber ammunition to the other guys. One catch. There was enough for only one bullet per person. As I handed the single bullet to the machine gunner, he nonchalantly held the cartridge aloft and asked, "Do they want me to fire this all at once?" Now let's look at some news from the world of medicine. Sleep better under a weighted blanket. Most people want to treat their insomnia without drugs for good reason, since sleeping pills can lead to dependency and cause dizziness and falls. A Swedish trial recently tested another option, weighted blankets. Available from retailers that sell bedding, these blankets supplement the usual filling material with pellets, chains, or beads. The added weight creates a grounding effect that brings the body comfort and calm. Kind of reminds me of binding a baby. Compared with study subjects who went to bed with a light cover, those given blanket that weighted about 15 pounds saw more improvement in both sleep and mental health issues such as depression and anxiety. Well, that's interesting. Now, this is something that young people ought to know about. Binge drinking may raise dementia risk. Overindulgent in alcohol, and you'll pay the price the next morning. Do it repeatedly, and the price might be a lot steeper. A paper published in the JAMA Network Open looked at people's drinking habits and the effect over a period of 12 to 30 years. Those who sometimes drank enough to lose consciousness were roughly twice as likely to eventually develop dementia. This held true regardless of how much they usually drank overall. So even if you're a moderate drinker, someone who consumes 14 or fewer alcohol units per week, a can of beer or a standard glass of wine contains around 2 units. You should still be careful not to drink too much all at one time. Don't hit the road after hitting your head. Even if you feel you've recovered from a concussion, its effects could impair driving, according to a study published in the Journal of Sport and Health Science. When researchers put a concussed patient in simulated scenarios, seeing a child running in front of a car, for example, their reaction times were considerably lower than normal, even after their symptoms had cleared up. The research is too new to say exactly how long, but it's best to wait after your symptoms subside before you get behind the wheel. For your health, pick up the phone. Ever since emailing and texting came along, many of us have relied on them to stay in touch, in part because we think a call might be more intrusive. However, when subjects in a Texas study were randomly assigned to reconnect with an old friend by either email or a phone call, calling gave them a stronger feeling of being bonded, without the additional awkwardness many had expected. Feeling connected to others is essential for health and well-being, when it comes to long-distance or socially distanced relationships, we should limit text-based communication and choose to calls or video chats more often. Do blood pressure meds raise cancer risk? An answer at last. Scientists have long discussed the possibility that hypertension drugs might affect cancer risk. Over several decades of research, the evidence has been inconsistent. Some studies suggested they increase the cancer rate, while others indicated they lower it or don't change it at all. After a number of news stories focused only on the former, some patients were hesitant to take their meds. But now, the largest analysis to date should put minds at ease. Based on 31 trials involving a total of 260,000 people around the world, the review concluded that no blood pressure drugs raise the risk of cancer. Meanwhile, there is good evidence that these medications help prevent heart attacks and strokes in people with high blood pressure. Eating well improves health, even without weight loss. People living with obesity don't need to be reminded that as a group, they have a higher risk of life-threatening health issues. It's not that they don't realize this, it's just that shedding extra pounds and keeping them off is far easier said than done. A study from Sweden's Uppsala University explored what might be a more feasible way of reducing risk, adopting healthy eating habits, not to be confused with dieting, which is solely focused on losing weight and may not include meals with a balanced array of nutritious foods. When the study began, its 79,000 participants had an average age of 61. To estimate the healthiness of each person's usual eating habits, researchers assessed how closely daily meals resembled the traditional Mediterranean diet, which relies on fruits, vegetables, legumes, nuts, unrefined and high-fiber grains, fish, and olive oil. During the 21-year follow-up, people who ate healthful but remained obese were no more likely to die than healthy eaters whose weight was lower, though they still had a slightly elevated risk of dying specifically from heart-related causes. Meanwhile, people who weren't obese but did tend to eat well had an above-average risk of death. The takeaway, while body weight is one factor in health and life expectancy, it is far from the be-all to end-all. Dancing helps seniors stay on their feet. Worldwide, almost a third of the people over 65 take a tumble each year. Dance activities such as tango, folk dancing, and swing reduce this risk by around 37%, according to a new review. This is likely because dancing improves balance, mobility, and lower body strength. Stressed? A pet video can help. It turns out that watching cat videos on the internet may actually do some good. We already know that hanging out with pets in real life can relieve stress. But now a British trial suggests that watching adorable animals on a screen can trigger a similar effect on your blood pressure. The next time you're feeling a bit anxious, spend some time with cute critters online. Time might help. Everyday Miracles, a Teacher's Life-Saving Call. In the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, Julia Koch began what was to only her second year as a first-grade teacher in a virtual classroom at Edgewood Elementary School in Muskegon Heights, Michigan. One September afternoon, a few weeks after the end of the school year, she received a call from Cynthia Phillips, who was having technical difficulties with her granddaughter's tools for online learning. Koch immediately knew that something was wrong with Phillips. The two women had spoken numerous times before, but Koch had never heard the grandmother sound quite like this. Her words were so jumbled that Koch could barely understand her, though she was able to make out that Phillips had fallen four times that day. Koch called her principal, Charles Lovelady, who assured her that he would call and check on Phillips himself. Just like Koch, Lovelady could barely understand Phillips. He suspected she might be having a stroke. He recognized the signs from when his own father had suffered one. Lovelady was able to make out the word kids and immediately be concerned that Phillips' two grandchildren, ages 6 and 8, were probably home alone with her. She is their primary guardian and scared. Lovelady asked the office manager to send an ambulance to the grandmother's home. Then Lovelady called Vanderbilt Matthews and Keitra Burt Walker, two deans in the school district, to tell them what was going on. Both of them dropped everything and drove to the family's home. When they pulled up less than 10 minutes later, the EMTs were treating Phillips while the two girls looked visibly shaken, were outside with a neighbor. The quick response from Koch and Lovelady saved Phillips' life. She arrived at the hospital in time to get treatment before chronic damage occurred. "If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here," said Phillips from her hospital bed about a month after her stroke. Thanks to an extended stay in the hospital, she has regained most of the movement throughout her body, except for one hand and a portion of her mouth, which affects her speech. "I'm proud of the people I work with, that they responded so quickly, and that did make a difference for Mrs. Phillips," says Koch. "I'm so pleased to be part of such a caring community." But the school's crisis response is only one piece of the community's extraordinary efforts to help Phillips and her granddaughters. Another family with young children took in the two girls. When that became too much to handle during the day with at-home learning, school administrators contracted the local Boys and Girls Club, where the girls now spend their days as part of a program to help working parents. They return to the host family at night. Virtual learning has been a challenge across the country, but it's fair to say that the Muskegon Heights has helped its community grow closer. Many teachers there gave their personal phone numbers to students and families in case they needed extra help. In this case, the exchange was literally life-altering. "The outpouring has been very humbling," Koch says about the recognition the school staff had received for their efforts, "but I also know that it's part of the kind of community we're in. We care about each other. We don't just say the words. We follow through." Now let's look at the cover story. And there's a picture, a photograph of a beautiful, looks like a German Shepherd, and it's got its tongue out, and it's looking at you with its golden eyes, and it's got a vest on. Obviously, it's a working dog. Does this dog know whether you have cancer? The canine nose is a marvel of nature. Science believes that a computerized model will save millions of lives. And there's a further picture with a young lady with her arms, well, not so young, looks like she's probably in her 50s, with her arms around the dog. Anna Marie D'Angelo with her star pupil, Osa. Osa, an athletic 62-pound German Shepherd with a long fluffy tail and a fondness for red bandanas, seems an unlikely superhero. She chews on the couch when she's bored. It's an above making a scene to get attention. On a recent day, when her foster mother and trainer, Anna Marie D'Angelo, stepped outside their New Jersey home while chatting with a visitor, Osa bounded up and barked for attention. When that failed, she leaped onto the patio table, stuck her snout in D'Angelo's face, and began whining. "You're unbelievable," D'Angelo growled before cracking a smile. But if Osa wants to play the diva, she's entitled. After all, how many 6-year-old pooches do you know who have mastered the art of sniffing out cancerous tumors and are involved in a research project that has the potential to revolutionize oncology? Despite the remarkable success of the immunotherapy, CRISPR, that's CRISPR, gene editing, and other recent breakthrough treatments, oncologists' inability to detect some cancers in their early stages remains one of the field's most untractable and fatal shortcomings. One disheartening case in point: of the estimated 21,750 women in the United States expected to be diagnosed this year with ovarian cancer, a disease that is treatable when found early, almost 14,000 are likely to die from it. That's 2/3. OSA might soon help improve those odds. She is part of an ambitious effort launched 5 years ago at the University of Pennsylvania that aims to reverse engineer one of the most powerful scent detection machines ever discovered, the canine nose. OSA is able to distinguish between blood samples taken from cancer papers and their healthy peers simply by sniffing them. In fact, she's one of 8 cancer detection dogs trained by D'Angelo and her colleagues at the Penn Vet Working Dog Center, a nonprofit X-Men Academy of sorts that breeds and trains detection dogs. The ultimate goal is to develop an electronic sniffer that can approximate the cancer-sniffing superpowers of OSA and her pals. Such a machine could then be deployed to thousands of doctor's offices and medical diagnostic facilities around the nation. And cancer is only one possible target. The type of system could lead to similar devices for different health issues, such as bacterial infections, diabetes, and epilepsy. Some dog trainers have even begun setting their sights on COVID-19. It's basically the exact same approach, says Cynthia Otto, founder and director of the center. And there's a picture of Osa with D'Angelo and Cynthia Otto, and they're not all at work, they're playing, which is kind of cute. It all starts with that wondrous invention of nature, the canine nose. Our own schnoz doesn't even come close. The average human is equipped with 5 million olfactory receptors, tiny proteins capable of detecting individual odor molecules. These receptors are clustered in a small area in the back of the human nasal cavity, meaning a scent must waft in and up the nostrils and up into the nostrils. In dogs, the internal surface area devoted to the smell extends from the nostrils to the back of the throat and comprises an estimated 300 million olfactory receptors, 60 times more than humans. Dogs also devote considerably more neural real estate to processing and interpreting these signals than humans do. Compared to a paltry 5% for human, 35% of a dog's brain is dedicated to smelling. Add it all up, and the dog nose is up to 1 million times more sensitive than the human nose. Sniffing is how dogs see the world, explains Mac Belkoff, professor emeritus of ecology and evolutionary biology at the University of Colorado Boulder. That's how they pick up information about who has been there. Are they happy? Are they sad? Is the female in heat? Are they feeling well or not? Their nose leads the way. Dogs sniff first and ask questions later. Humans have always appreciated the potential of canine snout. In the Middle Ages, authorities in France and Scotland relied on dogs and their sniffing abilities to hunt down outlaws. Search and rescue dogs emerged in the 18th century when the monks of the great St. Bernard Hospice in the Swiss Alps discovered that canines they'd been breeding could lead them to avalanche victims buried beneath the snow. Beside this history, science hadn't considered whether dogs could detect cancer until the late 1980s, after 30-year-old medical resident Highwell Williams stumbled on scientific gold. Upon arriving at King's College Hospital in London to begin his training as a dermatologist, Williams was tasked with reviewing every case of melanoma seen at the hospital over the previous 20 years. It was an eye-glazing assignment, recalls Williams, but one afternoon he came across a forward notation in a file that caught his attention. It read simply, "Dog sniffed at lesion." What did that mean? Was it possible the dog in the file actually smelled cancer? "So I rang the lady in the file up," Williams recalled, "and we had the most fascinating conversation." The patient, a 44-year-old woman, told Williams that her border collie Doberman mix named Baby Boo had become fixated on a curious mole on the woman's left thigh, sniffing it often. The ritual continued every day for several months, with Baby Boo nuzzling the woman's leg through her trousers. Baby Boo finally tried to bite the lesion off, at which point the woman visited the doctor. When the doctor excised the mole, they found it was malignant melanoma. "Something about that lesion fascinated the dog," Williams recalls, "and it literally saved this woman's life." Williams and a colleague published their findings in The Lancet, a well-respected medical journal. Suddenly, dog lovers around the world were reaching out to Williams and sharing similar experiences. There was a 66-year-old man who developed a patch of eczema on the outer side of his left thigh, a lesion that became the obsession of his Labrador retriever until he went to the doctor. It was found to be basal cell carcinoma. There was George the Schnauzer. Trained by a Florida dermatologist, George went crazy when he sniffed out suspicious mole on the leg of a patient. It turned out to be malignant. Over the years, since a growing body of evidence has emerged suggesting that dogs can sniff out bladder cancer, prostate cancer, diabetes, and even malaria, among other conditions, but not just any Chihuahua, Corgi, or Beagle can do the job. Like most of the dogs, Osa arrived at Penvec's Working Dog Center from a breeder at two months of age. "We look at their genetics," says D'Angelo. "We look at their workability. They have to come from working lines, not show or pet lines, but one that has a hunt-prey drive." Osa began taking obedience and agility training, walking a plank, climbing a ladder, climbing over a rubble pile, and quickly advanced to basic odor detection skill training. During these sessions, the dogs are introduced to a universal detector calibrate, a potent, distinct odor developed by a veterinary scientist to train dogs. The trainer places the calibrate, a powder cane within a Mylar bag with a tiny hole to let the odor out, on the floor or on a wall and holds it in hand. As soon as the dog sniffs at the odor to investigate, the trainer marks the smell by making a noise with a clicker or simply saying yes and then rewards the dog with a treat. This process is repeated until the dog learns that when it finds this odor, it gets rewarded. Next, the trainer begins offering dog choices. For instance, placing two distinct odors in identical containers, only one of which produces a click and a treat when sniffed. Once that is mastered, the trainer begins withholding the treat until the dog freezes in front of the container of choice and stares. As a dog undergoes this foundational training, the trainers evaluate their skill sets and temperaments and use the data to choose a particular area of specialization. Dogs that demonstrate a passion for running on rubble enter search and rescue training. Those that don't enjoy rubble but have a strong noses might become dardotics or bomb dogs. Dogs who think that lightly biting people is a fun game, D'Angelo jokes, end up as police dogs. And speaking of bomb dogs, I volunteered at the USO at the Raleigh-Durham Airport, and one of the things they did occasionally was come up and ask for a volunteer to come down so they could check out and make sure their dogs were still alert. And what they gave us was a little piece of probably C4 explosive stuff in a plastic bag, and we stuck it in our pocket and actually got it lined as if we were checking into the airport. And then they'd walk along the line with the dog, and the dog would either go past us if they weren't ready, or they'd sniff us and come right at us. And the one time I did it, I was in line, and the dog took about two steps past me, turned around, stared at me, and pointed his nose right at my pocket. And the lady behind me started backing up with a panicking look face on her. She thought I was really carrying a bomb. We both assured her that it was just a test. Penn's medical detection dogs are the ones with quirky personalities and narrow focuses. Otto calls them the center's sensitive souls. They dislike noisy, crowded environments such as airports or disaster recovery sites. Osa is very suspicious of people she doesn't know, so much so that nobody is allowed to approach D'Angelo's house unannounced. To do so results in loud barking and pandemonium. Upon entering the home, visitor, host, and dog must all proceed immediately outside to play ball to set Osa at ease before any business can be conducted. But with these neurotic traits also comes an uncommon focus. I often refer to our medical detection dogs as the CPAs, Otto says. They would love to just look at the spreadsheets and find the one number that's out of place. They really like having things very neat and controlled. They're the detailed dogs. While Osa had all the qualities that make up a great sniffer dog, that didn't guarantee that she'd be able to master the most essential task of all. To find out if she could, D'Angelo and her team put Osa in front of a scent wheel, a stationary metal contraption with multiple arms, each one of which is large enough to hold two separate containers, one containing plasma from a woman with metastatic ovarian cancer, and the other plasma from a healthy volunteer. When Osen stopped in front of the correct sample, pointed her nose at it and froze, D'Angelo and her colleagues hugged and cried. "You don't know if it's going to work, so you train it, and you train it, and you train it," she says. "You're actually now going to put the real cancer in the wheel, in the plasma, and see if the dog can identify it and ignore the other samples," and it worked. The very first time, it was very emotional. Yet that's only half the challenge. To transfer Osa's remarkable abilities into something replicable, an electronic nose, researchers have to figure out what it is precisely that Osa and her friends are reacting to. D'Angelo says the blood samples she has trained her dogs with contain hundreds of different organic compounds, any one of which could be capturing the dog's attention. And that is why Penn team includes not just the physicists and engineers designing the instrumentation for their electronic nose, but also chemists to help figure out what exactly that electronic nose needs to be calibrated to smell. The group has been breaking the cancer samples down from the progressively smaller constituent parts and presented them to the dogs to winnow down which of the hundreds of potential aromatic chemical compounds, odorants, grab their attention. A similar approach is used to train the device. The engineers start with two separate samples consisting of many odorants mixed together and make sure the machine can distinguish between the two. Then they remove individual odorants from each sample, training the machine to distinguish increasingly subtle differences that are more and more difficult to detect. The goal is to eventually place a vial of plasma inside a microwave-sized electronic sniffer that can analyze its odorants and provide a reading of healthy, benign, or malignant within minutes. Another version might handle up to 10 samples at a time. While most people would likely prefer to have what ails them sniffed out by a sympathetic and wet nose rather than a cold machine, that's not in the cards, according to Bruce Kimball, a chemist at the Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia. The sheer number of dogs and handlers that would have to be deployed to the various hospitals, labs, and medical facilities around the country is just not practical, he says. An electronic nose prototype has been built, and it's successful in sniffing out cancer 90 to 95% of the time. As impressive as that sounds, researchers there's still more work to be done. Right now, they have a good idea of what compounds or chemicals create the odor, but the team wants more specificity. The one objective is to be able to distinguish between early and late stage cancer. It would be incredible to identify people in early stage and really have an impact on saving lives, says Otto. The dogs have been able to detect that. With that ability, a blood test would be sent to a central lab, or ideally performed in a doctor's office, and rolled in as part of one's annual checkup, making some hidden cancers a thing of the past. If it all works as D'Angelo and Otto hope, and Otto is confident that a working device is on the horizon, it'd be one of the most important victories in the war against cancer yet. Of course, neither Osen nor any of her furry friends have much idea what the fuss is all about. To them, it's just a game, says D'Angelo. Osa just knows that I was trained when I find this odor and I indicate it and I get rewarded. Osa prefers that reward be a piece of cheese. It's a small price to pay. After all, Osa's nose is potentially revolutionizing how and when we detect countless types of cancer and saving thousands of lives along the way. The Stranger Who Changed My Life. And there's a picture of a bunch of different couples together. There's Mary and Cecil, who looks like she's probably middle-aged and he's older. And there's a black woman and a white woman, Connie and Susan. And then there's Jana and Tina. Both of them look like they're probably in their 50s, early 60s. And Bill and Giovanni. Bill is older and Giovanni looks like he's probably in his 30s. He's African-American, got a cool goatee and a mustache. My most unlikely friend, would you pal around with your spouse's ex or buddy up to someone who put a put in your face? These readers did and found lifelong companions. I met my best friend Bill Cervenka at work. I was 23 and he was 85, but it seemed I had more in common with him than with any friends my age. We were both really stubborn. He always had an umbrella, and whenever it was raining after work, he used to say, "Let me walk you to your car." I would always decline the offer, but he would say, "I'm walking to your car, whether you like it or not." Bill and I always took the same lunch break. He didn't recognize many of my Mexican dishes and often asked what I was eating. I always offered him a taste, along with some of my Oreos. Eventually, it became our tradition that every time a new limited edition Oreo flavor was released, we waited to try it together. Bill passed away in April 2019, and I miss him every day. Now I always carry my umbrella and make sure people without one don't get wet. And when someone declines my offer, I say, I'm walking you whether like it or not. Giovanni Pazvilla, Painville, Illinois. Jana and Tina. Tina's my best friend. She's also my husband's ex-wife. When we first met, she and Bob had divorced for more than 12 years, and he and I had been dating only a short time. We didn't become close friends right away. It took years getting to know each other and seeing each other for who we truly are. We've stood together through difficult times and family hardships. We've shared wonderful holiday celebrations, and we were together to set the birth of our first grandson. Even though we now live 1,500 miles apart, Bob and I still vacation with her and her husband, and Saturday is our phone call day. She has brought so much joy and love into my life, I don't know what I'd do without her. Jana Fisher, Port Charlotte, Florida. Bill and Bobby, the devout principal and the biker dude. Bill Grinshaw was a retired school principal who looked rather stern. He was an organist and a highly respected in our church. I wore leather jackets and rode a motorcycle. One day I jokingly asked him if he would like to go out to lunch with me on my bike. To my surprise, he accepted. He was the opposite of me in so many ways, but he enjoyed riding with me on my bike. We took many rides together, but he never told anyone about them. I think it brought out a sense of adventure in him, and I was the only person he felt comfortably sharing that side of himself with. He was shy around most people. At his funeral, I told his family about our rides, and they were astonished. I miss his kind and gentle character and our rides together. Bobby Mills, Macon, Georgia. Mary and Cecil. It was my cousin David who urged me to read a book by Cecil Murphy and apply for a scholarship he was offering for Writing Conference 2012. By the time I learned that I had won it, my husband had unexpectedly died. I wanted to meet the man who was responsible for my scholarship, so I attended a conference where he was speaking. When I heard a few months later that his wife had died, I began writing him letters. I may have been nearly 30 years younger than he was, but this was one path I had walked before him. I sent portions of my book in progress, and he ended up writing a foreword for that book. I write him a long letter at least once a month. I ask for his advice on writing, life, faith, even dating. He answers by email, never failing to say exactly what I need to hear. I've saved all of his emails, more than 125 of them. I can honestly say that an 87-year-old man is one of my best friends. Murray Potter Kenyon, Dubuque, Iowa. Sue and Karen. The Fancy Nancy and the Plain Jane. We're the same age. We both like to sing. That's where the similarities stop and the differences go on and on. We met more than 20 years ago at our local church choir. Karen is a lovely, quiet woman who would never think of using makeup. And then there's me. I put on makeup to take out the garbage, and I don't have an inside voice. So why are we friends? Because we share our ethics, our faith, and our music. We love each other for being ourselves and for being good people with good hearts. When we meet for breakfast, I show up in my brightly colored top, and she comes in with her hair tied back and her thrift store jeans. I sit and sip my coffee with flavored creamer while she enjoys her glass of plain water, and we talk for hours. We just work. She is one of my favorite people. Sue Wallace, Chesterfield, Missouri. Connie and Susan. I met Connie in 1976, and we were both competing in a taekwondo tournament. Both red belts, we had been paired to compete against each other. As we sat next to each other waiting for our match, Connie began to talk to me. She was friendly and had a wonderful smile. I was struck by how nice she was. Then we got up to compete. Connie suddenly put on the fiercest face you can imagine. This terrified me. Out of self-preservation, I proceeded to kick her in the head twice and won the match. Despite this, Connie and I have become close friends. And despite our many differences, we have remained friends throughout the last 43 years. Connie is black and I am white. She was raised in a big city, and I was brought up in a small town. Connie is a liberal Democrat, and I am a conservative Republican. Connie now lives on the East Coast, and I live in northern Wisconsin, but we keep in touch through social media. One of her favorite things to do is to introduce me as her bestie, who put a foot in her face. Susan List, Summit Lake, Wisconsin. Bernice and Ron, the Foliage Fan and her faraway pen pal. The year was 1981. I was working as the coordinator of Know America, an educational experience for adults in Washington, D.C. Bernice was the coordinator of a group of about 40 of her fellow North Dakotans who were attending a week-long Know America program in October. On the last day of the week, I saw Bernice picking up huge sycamore leaves falling from the trees and lined the center's driveway. Sycamore leaves are not great fall leaves. They tend to just turn brown and fall down. We don't have a lot of trees in North Dakota, at least none like these, she explained as she chose another specimen for her scrapbook. As soon as I could, I went out and found some far better fall leaves from Bernice, red and orange maple leaves, yellow aspen, orange and sassafras, and I included them in the envelope along with my thank you letter to her for attending the program. That's how I came to learn the truth. Bernice wanted these particular leaves for their size, not their color. Bernice told me that she had never seen so large, and that was why she was picking them up. It made for a great joke, and we laughed about it all year as we planned our next group Knows America experience. We quickly became close friends, and we played close friends ever since. Last year, I sent leaf stickers to Bernice for her birthday. In return, she sent me a copy of the book The Last of the Breed by her favorite author, Lula Moore. Inside, she had placed a leaf sticker on every sentence in the book that mentioned leaf or leaves. 34 stickers in total. Ron Drum, Drums, Pennsylvania. Wayne and Suzanne. In 1997, I was a 10-year-old tomboy growing up in rural upstate New York. I remember Wayne's voice on the phone telling me, "Suzanne, your horses are in the garden again, and Dolly, his wife, and Hazel, his mother, are mad." Wayne kept me company while I got the troublemakers out of the garden. Wayne was 85 when I introduced him to my husband. Now my husband and I see him every time we travel home. We have a standing birthday breakfast every year. In 2020, Wayne turned 100. Susan Ryan, Cummington, Massachusetts. Cream of the crops. Here's the problem with fruit. It's inconsistent. Some apples are delicious. Some taste bad. Sometimes blueberries are great. Sometimes they are disgusting. And you know what's the same every time? Doritos. And now we switch over to Consumer Reports. And we start out with a product update. And this is a product that's very close to my heart. Well, no, actually, it's closer to my face. It's about the best tools for a great-looking beard. Of the estimated 32.8 million men in the U.S. who sport facial hair, 10.9 million have full beards, 9 million have a goatee or a partial beard, 8.7 million have scruff, 10 million have a mustache. I have a full beard. It's light, but I have a full beard. The quarantine beard is officially a thing. Some people are skipping their morning shave and cultivating facial hair while working from home during the coronavirus pandemic. I was allowed to grow one due to work changing the rules, Glenn Foley said in response to CR's Facebook query. Love my beard. I grow my full beard when I retired. I actually had a mustache for a number of years before then. But all those new beards are going to require a little maintenance, which could mean a lot of new customers for manufacturers of electric beard trimmers. Find out more about the world of beard trimmers and how people use them in their daily lives. CR's Consumer Experience and Usability Research Team work with a group of volunteers sporting a variety of facial hair lengths, styles, and types to evaluate five popular beard trimmers on the market today. Before we get into the results of our evaluation, here's what to expect when shopping for a beard trimmer and using one for the first time. Beard trimmer basics. When shopping for a beard trimmer, it's easy to get overwhelmed. There are many on the market, but Stephen Wilson, founder of All About Beards, beards.org, a website dedicated to promoting beards, recommends focusing on three factors: ease of use, durability, and performance. Blades are the most important part of a beard trimmer. Look for a model with strong, sharp blades made of stainless steel or titanium. You should be able to find this information on the packaging or in the product details online. Depending on how you plan to use the trimmer, you may want to add additional features. Someone who travels a lot, for example, might benefit from a travel lock, which prevents the trimmer from turning on while in transit, and a model that supports universal voltage. Box contents will vary, but generally you can expect to get the core trimmer unit, several comb or trimming guards of various lengths, attachment for ear, nose, and brow trimming, clipper oil, and a cleaning brush, a storage case or pouch, and a charging or power cord. How we evaluate it? To find out which beard trimmers are easiest to use, maintain, and handle, CR's Consumer Experience enlisted 24 people ranging in ages from 18 to 74, all CR staffers or their family members, with a variety of hair types, facial hair lengths, styles, and levels of prior experience using beard trimmers. Each was asked to try out one of the five widely sold bottles: the Braun BT5070 Men's Beard Trimmer, Philips Norelco Multigroom 7000, Remington Smart Beard Trimmer, Remington Vacuum Beard and Stubble Trimmer, and Wall Lithium-Ion Stainless Steel. Each beard trimmer model was assigned to four or five people. Volunteers were expected to use the beard trimmer at least twice over a period of 2 to 4 weeks, to share their experiences in the form of written notes, and to score their trimmers on the following factors: setup and help. Participants were asked to ask how easy or difficult it was for them to get started and set up the model for their needs, and how useful the instructions were. Maintenance and cleaning. Participants were asked about the required cleaning steps, including the process of disassembling and reassembling a device, as well as anything else they needed to do to take care of it. Operation. Participants were asked how easy or difficult it was to handle the trimmer, and how satisfied they were overall with the results. Basic features. After at least two uses of the beard trimmer, participants were asked what they thought about the model's settings, attachments, and features, as well as how easy or difficult it was to change the attachments. Advanced features. For this study, two models with advanced features were assessed. One, the Remington Smart Beard Trimmer, had a digital touchscreen with memory settings. The other, the Remington Vacuum Beard and Stubble Trimmer, had a vacuum to collect hair clippings. Only participants who tried out these models scored advanced features. All participants also answered 10 usability questions about their beard trimmers, including whether they thought they needed help from an experienced person to use the model, how confident they felt using it, and whether they liked using it. What our volunteers liked. First of all, participants appreciated having a beard trimmer during the pandemic. "I like it a lot," one participant, who usually gets his beard trimmed by a barber, said about having a beard trimmer at home. "I definitely can see myself using the device to help stretch out the time I take in between barbershop visits." The features and qualities they like included the following. Easy to follow instructions. Some participants said they like to use third-party tutorials, such as YouTube videos. Others also appreciated receiving clear and most thorough instructions from the manufacturer. "The instructions were comprehensive," said the first-time trimmer user who tried the Wall lithium ion, adding that the manual discussed the basics of trimming and using all of the different components. Sturdiness and durability. Durability was a key point for many participants, reflected in how sturdy their model, felt overall in the sturdiness of its component parts. Fully washable. Participants who got fully washable models liked being able to simply run their trimmers underwater to clean them. Travel lock. Participants responded enthusiastic to the travel locks on the Remington Smart Beard Trimmer and Wall Lithium Ion. This feature prevents these trimmers from turning on while in transit. Packaging. Clean, elegant, and informal exterior packaging made a difference in the beard trimmer's appeal. What they didn't like. Lots of small, flimsy parts. Trimmers that came with many small parts made participants nervous about whether they could keep track of them all. Some also worked that the small parts looked cheap and might break over time. "Feels a little flimsy," one user said in a typical comment regarding the parts. Maintenance and cleaning requirements. Participants who tried models that cannot be rinsed under running water worried that this would make cleaning more onerous over time. Some models also require the user to oil the blades periodically, which participants felt would be overly time-consuming. Short battery life for long charging time. Long battery life was a key feature for most participants, many of whom said that they don't want to have to charge or change their trimmer between uses. Long charge time also annoyed participants who want to use their trimmer as soon as they unboxed it. Noise level. Although some participants said louder trimmer gave them more confidence, that it was a robust machine, most preferred trimmers with quieter motors. And I will say that I've had my trimmer for probably pretty close to 10 years, and I don't even remember the name of it. I've only changed the batteries in it one time, and I have no problems using it. Beard maintenance tips. For those of you who have beards, this is interesting. We have several professional groomers for tips on using a beard trimmer and keeping your beard looking smart. Do your prep work. Take care of your facial hair, much like the hair on your head, says Des Marshall, a barber based in Brooklyn, New York. Keep it clean, comb it out so that it doesn't tangle, and brush it to make it lie flat. Specialty tools are available, but Marshall says any comb or brush will do, and your hair should be clean and dry when you start trimming. Start slow. It may seem obvious, but beard trimming novices should keep this in mind. You can always remove more hair, but you can't put it back once it's shorn. So take an incremental approach, Marshall says. Use the plastic trimming or comb guards, which hold the cutting blades off your face, to get a preset and uniform whisker length. Start with one of the longer guards and run it through your beard with a grain in the direction your whiskers naturally lean. In other words, going against the grain will result in a significant closer cut. Then, if you want to take off more, switch to a slightly shorter guard and repeat, and so on. Once you like the length, run over it all again to make sure your whole beard is even. Watch the neck. Many first-timers get tripped up by the neckline, which you form using your trimmer without the comb guards. The key question is how far down your neck your beard should end. Some people are tempted to take it line up with their jaw or even trim it just under their chin, Marshall says. Instead, she says, create balance by following the natural line of your beard. Craig Whitley, a.k.a. Greg the Barber, a men's grooming expert based in Los Angeles, agrees. Caution that your beard line should never be higher than half an inch above your Adam's apple. Having it too high, he says, will make your neck look too long, something that most people don't want, especially when we're all on Zoom. Considering applying a product. As your beard grows, your skin is likely to get red, itchy, or flaky, especially after about 2 weeks of growth. For relief, Whitley suggests regular exfoliation, once every few days using a fine-grained exfoliant, and a daily facial moisturizer. Cassie Kurtz, a barber based in Manhattan, New York, is partial to beard oil, which he says relieves irritated skin and softens your beard hair. Warm a few drops in your hands, Cassie says, then give yourself a mini face massage along the neck, jawline, and cheeks. How the trimmer stacked up. Consumer Reports asked 4 or 5 staffers or their family members to try out each of these particular popular beard trimmers. The users scored the trimmers on a range of factors and took notes of the overall user experience. All the models performed their basic functions well, according to the users, but one of the strengths and weaknesses emerged from their scores and comments. The models were listed in rank order, with the Remington Smart Beard Trimmer taking top spot and the Braun BT5070 Men's Beard Trimmer landing in fifth place. The Remington Smart Beard Trimmer is $70, got 5 out of 5 for setup and help, 4 out of 5 for maintenance and cleaning, 5 out of 5 for operation, 5 out of 5 for basic features, 4 out of 5 for advanced features, and 5 out of 5 for usability. CR's take. The Remington Smart Beard Trimmer ranked the highest among our volunteers. Users appreciate the trimmer's smart features, such as digital setting to auto-adjust the trimmer length and the travel lock. Most users express no discomfort to their skin or hair while using this model. One said this model is not user-friendly for left-handed people, given that the travel lock button is on the right side of the trimmer. Philips Norelco, Multigroom 7000, $55. Setup and help was only 4 out of 5. Maintenance and cleaning was 5 for 5. Operation was 5 for 5. Basic features was 5 for 5. And usability was 5 for 5. CR's take. Users felt that the Philips Norelco Multigroom 7000 was appealing, precise, and had braid strength to cut through coarse hair. It was easy to clean, they said, but setup and use instructions were difficult to follow, even for those who had used beard trimmers before. Users liked that it was fully washable, small enough to pack easily for travel, and simple to use. The Wahl Lithium-Ion Stainless Steel, $70. By the way, I said the Norelco is $55. Setup and help on the Wahl is 5 for 5. Maintenance and cleaning were 5 for 5. Operation, basic features, and usability were 4 for 5. CR's take. Participants found the setup instructions comprehensive, covering the basics of trimming as well as how to use all the components. However, the model fell short on basic features. Many participants felt the attachments were flimsy. One participant observed that the charge seemed to be weakening by the second shave. The next one is the Remington Vacuum Beard and Stubble Trimmer at $50. And this is all 4.5 for setup and help, and maintenance and cleaning, operation, basic features, advanced features, and usability. CR's take. The vacuum feature on the Remington Vacuum Beard and Stubble Trimmer appealed to the volunteers, but it requires more maintenance, and because users are required to empty out the vacuum chamber. The model and its attachments felt a little flimsy to some, and some didn't think it worked well with their thick or coarse hair. Overall, however, users were satisfied with the trimmer's performance. And finally, we have the Braun BT5070, the men's beard trimmer, also $50. And that's also 4 or 5 for the setup, help, maintenance, operation, basic features, and usability. CR's take. While the Braun BT5070 beard trimmer ranked the lowest out of the beard trimmers we evaluated, it scored well. Although the model appeared to be simple to use, volunteers without prior beard trimmer experience did not find the setup instructions to be helpful. Users said that cleaning the trimmer wasn't difficult, but this model is not fully washable, so cleaning it isn't as easy as running it under the faucet. 20 ways to sleep better tonight. Counting herds of sheep these days? A good night's rest has probably never been more necessary and harder to get. Use our mattresses, pillows, and sheet readings along with your advice on how to tweak your bedroom and revise your morning and evening routines to get the shut-eye you crave. There's an illustration here. It shows a special weighted blankets can provide a sense of comfort and may even promote release hormones to help us sleep. A worn-out mattress can lead to a poor night's sleep. Our mattress ratings will help find you the right one for you. Blocking out all light by outfitting windows with shades, blinds, or heavy curtains can help your body produce melatonin and help improve sleep. and a supportive pillow can help you sleep through the night and wake without feeling kinks and knots. And we've got some pillow ratings, too. Sleep is critical to our health, but for many of us, a restorative night's slumber is another casualty of the COVID-19 pandemic, at the very time we need it the most. In a nationally representative CR survey of 2,851 U.S. adults last November, 28% of Americans reporting having more trouble falling or staying asleep since the pandemic hit the U.S. Not getting enough sleep can weaken the immune system, says Ralphio Paleo, M.D., a sleep specialist and clinical professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Stanford University, and the author of How to Sleep, the New Science-Based Solution for Sleeping Through the Night, Artisan 2020. If you add on top of chronic sleep deprivation, the stress of an infection, our systems can be overwhelmed. The National Institutes of Health has found that improving our sleep can help protect against COVID-19, make it more important than ever. Using our bedrooms as work and exercise spaces, or even as classrooms, as many people are doing now, only makes getting a good night's sleep more difficult, experts say. We typically tell patients that the bedroom is only for two things, sleeping and sex, says Malath Basner, M.D., professor in the Division of Sleep and Chronobiology at the University of Pennsylvania. He explains that limiting the bedroom to those activities sends a clear signal to your brain when it's time to hit the sack. But obviously we realize that not everybody may have that option. No matter how much tossing and turning you're doing these days, we're to help you get on track to better sleep. In the following pages, we explain the smartest way to prepare for a solid snooze time and to steer you toward the mattress, pillows, and sheets that will keep you cozy all night. For those who wake to find themselves baking under the covers at night, we offer a new ratings on mattresses, cooling pads, and if you're among the many using a bedroom for double duty, we have tips to minimize the mixed message to send your brain. We even hope expert advice on ways to start your day can lead to a better night's sleep, and hopefully my reading won't put you to sleep either. How to get ready for bed. A healthy bedtime routine can help make you transition from keyed up to jello-limbed and prepare your body and mind to melt into slumber's warm embrace. The key is to ease into it. Follow these tips. Try meditation. There's some evidence that meditating during the day can improve sleep at night. A study published by the Journal of American Medical Association found that mindfulness meditation improves sleep in older adults with sleep disturbances. Resources are widely available online, including the Center for Mindfulness at the University of California at San Diego. Go to medschoolusc.edu and enter mindfulness into the search bar. Some research shows that widely available apps such as Calm and Headspace, which use guided imagery, and even bedtime stories to encourage sleep are also effective. Number two, give your belly a break. Stuffing yourself can make you groggy, but experts say that going to bed with a full stomach can cause reflux, which can wake you up. Sue X. Ming, M.D., a professor of the neurology department at the Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School, recommends staying away from heavy meals 3 to 4 hours before bedtime, especially aboard foods with high fat content or dense carbohydrates, which stay in the stomach longer, she says. Number three, put the plug in the jug. If sales figures are any indication, people are drinking more during the pandemic. Sales of spirit and hard liquor increased by 33% during the first 6 months of 2020, compared with all of 2019, according to Ibotta, a cashback app that rewards people for everyday purchases. Of course, some of that might have to do with the fact that the bars were closed. A drink or two might seem like a good way to quiet the mind before bed, but experts say that alcohol actually increases rapid eye movement, REM, sleep, a critical phase of the sleep cycle that helps our emotional equilibrium and enables us to retain things we learned during the day. Alcohol will get you to sleep, Ming says, but you'll wake up in the middle of the night. Number four, turn down the temp. National Sleep Foundation recommends keeping the bedrooms at a cool 65 degrees for optimal sleep. Being too hot or losing too much heat can interrupt the REM sleep and cause people to wake up, Ming says. A programmable thermostat can be set to cool a room just right in the wee hours. Another way to regulate your body temperature is to use a mattress cooling device. Number five, ease into bedtime. Building a wind-down time into your routine is a good way to prepare your mind and body for sleep. Sarah Benjamin, M.D., a clinical associate and instructor with neurology at the Johns Hopkins Center for Sleep, recommends a personal care ritual, washing your face, brushing your teeth, etc., an hour before bedtime, and then moving on to relaxing activities until it lights out. These can include reading, listening to music, writing in a journal, praying, meditating, or doing gentle forms of yoga such as restorative yin or yoga nidra, All of it involved little or no movement. Just be sure that whichever you do is calming. No rock and roll horror flicks or murder serials. Number 6, turn off the TV and all other screens. Bright light and the blue light produced by TVs, cell phones, and computers can suppress the production of melatonin, the hormone responsible for regulating your sleep. Cell phone displays are extending the day into the night, says Lisa Ostrin, OD, an associate professor at the University of Houston College of Optometry. She says that the nighttime mode on devices may reduce the effect of blue light somewhat, but not the stimulating effect that reading email can have on your brain. Sleep experts recommend turning off all screens and dimming bedroom lights at least 30 minutes before you go to bed. Fade to black. Heavy curtains or blinds will reduce light exposure and can improve sleep. Anything that blocks out lights helps you stay asleep or sleep more soundly, says Ming, adding that the darkness promotes the secretion of melatonin too. Take some sound advice if environmental noises disturb your sleep. White noise can be very helpful, Benjamin says. Generated by a white noise machine or certain apps, white noise masks sounds, such as honking horns or slam doors, that wake you and keep you from falling asleep. Number 9, considering a sleep tracker. Devices such as the Oura Ring are becoming increasingly popular, that's O-U-R-A, and more sophisticated. Some fitness trackers and smartwatches also offer sleep tracking capabilities. Research has found that they can do a good job of tracking the overall time you sleep and encouraging good habits by, for instance, reminding you when to power off your devices and get ready for bed. Some can even track environmental factors such as light and temperature in a bedroom. Benjamin notes, however, that they can't accurately keep track sleep stages. Even so, some people find the data on sleep time, as well as on heart and respiration rates and body temperature, useful for gauging how factors like exercise and alcohol may affect their sleep. In rare cases, people can become obsessed with their sleep stats and lie awake at night worrying about what the data will reveal in the morning. If you're someone who really digs data on your sleep habits, go for it. But if the device becomes one more thing you worry about, it's better to ditch it. Make a bed you can't resist. Follow these tips to create a bed you can't wait to get into at night. Assess your mattress. One that isn't supportive and doesn't properly distribute your body weight can cause joint or muscle pain and make you restless and interfere with your sleep. If you feel sore in the morning, or if your mattress feels lumpy, or has a permanent depression in it, or is more than 10 years old, it's probably time for a new one. In our test, we rate mattresses by how well they support various body types. We also point you to the brands that are most comfortable based on feedback from 73,000 CR members who purchased one within the past decade. Pillow Talk. The more a pillow keeps your neck and spine naturally aligned, the more comfortable you'll sleep. To find a pillow that keeps your neck in as neutral a position as possible and doesn't crane it in any position, says Joel Press, MD, physiatrist, I've never seen that before, in chief at the Hospital for Facial Surgery in New York. A supported pillow can prevent excessive motion and keep your neck in a better position without straining it. The Coop Home Goods pillow for $60 tops our rating. You can customize its support by adding or removing filling, and it comes with a generous 100-night sleep trial policy. Number 12, this is a whole list of things. Choose your sheets wisely. As with all bedding, the most important thing about sheets is that they're comfortable. To rate cotton sheets, we test how well they fit in a mattress after a year's worth of washing, how much they wrinkle, how easily they tear. Our testing panel also grades it for softness. L.L. Bean's Prima Cotton Percale sheets are nearly as good as the top-ranked Maltok Sierra and are far less expensive, $149 for a queen set versus $258 for a single fitted sheet. The L.L. Bean set shrank only slightly after a year's worth of washing, and like the Matouk, was judged to be soft. Paleo says that sleeping on clean sheets can lessen allergic reactions to the dust mites, which can make you congested and agitated. Sierra recommends washing sheets at least once every 2 weeks. Try a weighted blanket. Long used to calm children with autism or behavioral disorders, weighted blankets have caught on with the general public as a way to improve sleep. Sales of these heavy quilted bed companies, I'm weighing up to 35 pounds, were soaring even before the pandemic. The idea is that weighted blankets gives a simple comfort and may facilitate the secretion of oxytocin, Pilato explains, but to what degree and whether its short-term or long-term effect is not clear. I have patients who like weighted blankets and others who don't. Those who like them really like them. The rule of thumb for choosing a weighted blanket is that it should be about 10% of your body weight. Popular models include the Y, that's just capital Y, small n, M, starting at $70, and the Harkla starting at $110 for a 15-pound blanket. Both are available in weights up to 25 pounds. Power up in the AM. No matter which side of the bed you wake up on, the way you manage your mornings can set the tone for the entire day. Our wake-up routine is just as important as the day ahead, as a relaxing nighttime routine is to sleep, says Clint View, an assistant professor of health sciences at UCLA and the author of Thrive State, Your Blueprint for Optimal Health, Longevity, and Peak Performance. Here are the habits that will set you on course for a less effective, productive day. And we probably won't finish them, but we'll start them. Get a head start. The right way to start your day actually begins the day before, according to Alex Hasselberger, a productivity coach in San Francisco. She suggests converting your last 15 minutes at work to making a to-do list for the following day. That's standard procedure. This allows you to mentally disconnect from work and avoid starting the next day in a chronic state of mind, wondering what to do first. Let there be light. A small study published in the journal Behavioral Brain Research found that sleep-deprived people exposed to stimulated, slowly increasing sunlight in the morning did significantly better at attention-based tasks throughout the day than those exposed to steady, dim light. Based on that finding, you might consider using an alarm clock that wakes you by gradually bathing your bedroom in light. Once you're awake, soak up the sunshine ASAP. Getting 10 to 20 minutes of direct sunlight just as you're going out of bed resets our circadian rhythms, Sue says, making it easier to fall asleep at bedtime. Take a tech break. Resist the temptation to check your email, text, Slack channels, and other electronic communications first thing in the morning, or even at the start of your workday. Hasselberger says that reserving the first hour of your workday for other tasks helps give you a sense of control over your day. It rarely makes a difference to others when we respond a message at 9 or 10 a.m., but you can get an incredible amount done in the hour you avoid checking email, she says. Those are other people's priorities, but because we are social creatures, the second we read a message, we feel compelled to respond. Depending on your profession and how demanding your boss is, off-the-grid time may be more like 10 to 15 minutes, but that's fine, too. And with that, dear listeners, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. Notice that's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so very much for listening.